It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Without a doubt, this race in Alabama was 100% a referendum on President Trump. The president initially distanced himself from Roy Moore and those allegations, but then he went all in with a full endorsement, even as it renewed his own sexual misconduct allegations. Moore's campaign spelled this out in plain terms. A vote against Roy Moore was a vote against Donald Trump, George.
The Democrat Doug Jones, the winner in Alabama, first Democrat in a generation from Alabama.
All right, that was the ABC News report. That's what happened overnight, if you're just tuning in. Sandy Rios in the morning with you. A real upset in Alabama. In fact, the first Democratic senator to be elected since 1992. And the final tally with 99% of the votes in was Roy Moore, 48.4%. Doug Jones, 49.9%. Now, that's 1.5 points apart, exactly. In spite of the closeness of that race, I noticed that Fox was eager to declare Doug Jones. I think they were the first maybe network to declare that he had won. And the headline on their page this morning says, Moore refuses to concede Alabama Senate race despite Jones' apparent victory. Now, I just have to say before I introduce our guest, it just seems when the race is that close, and yes, Judge Moore has not conceded because we're going to talk about that with our guest. I'll just say he hasn't conceded. We'll talk about it in just a second. But he has good reason. The race is very close. He likely will not prevail. I would have to say that personally. But there is nothing wrong with the race being this close and someone wanting to wait until all the votes are counted until they actually concede. But that's what's happening in Alabama. And with that, I've asked Ken Cuccinelli to join us this morning. Ken watches all the Senate races around the country because he's the head of the Senate Conservatives Fund. He and the Senate Conservatives Fund supported Judge Moore. Ken, were you surprised by the result?
Honestly, so. I mean, it's hard for anybody to bear on the kind of onslaught that Judge Moore has, including from his own side, including his sitting senator, Senator Shelby in Alabama, and still survive it. And, you know, if the numbers hold up, that onslaught succeeded. So, and as you note, Sandy, in a situation like this, just speaking in terms of statistics, Judge Moore is unlikely to prevail here. You don't normally find a 10,000-vote swing in any state anymore. And that was the margin last time I looked, even though it's, you know, a small percentage. Nonetheless, it does look like he's going to lose the race, and you know we have Mitch McConnell largely to thank for that. And to the extent the establishment folks like Mitch McConnell complain that Judge Moore was our nominee in the first place, well, the first thing they did in the race was spend millions of dollars to knock Freedom Caucus Congressman Mo Brooks out in the first round of the primary, and unfortunately, the president helped them do it. He got some very bad political advice. I think he severely regrets it now, not just because Judge Moore lost, but because it was such a bad decision to get in for Luther Strange on behalf of the president. So there's a lot that went on in this race to get us to this point. But, you know, to lose the Senate seat in Alabama, I mean, for conservatives, that hurts. I mean, we're trading Jeff Sessions for Doug Jones.
Yes, and I want to talk about the implications in a second, because actually, honestly, Ken, that is the most depressing part of this. I love Judge Moore, and I think he's innocent. I think he's a really good man. But I want to talk about his race just a minute more, because I do want to remind myself, as I remind everyone else, what he was up against. You know, we say Donald Trump is up against insurmountable odds, and he is. He is. But I would say with Roy Moore, he also, Fox was after him. Fox completely branded him. Every time they reported the story, they failed to talk about the discrediting of many of his accusers. I would say most of them. And some of them weren't even accusing him of anything other than dating him when they were dating them when they, he was like when they were 17 and 18. And so the accusations were overblown, and Fox never sorted that out, so they didn't have his back. I think they're happy about that. Trump at least has that. And of course, the transgender gay lobby, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Planned Parenthood types, everyone, Hollywood is rejoicing, poured money in to defeat. And Justice Moore, and I haven't mentioned the swamp because you mentioned them. The write-in candidates, Shelby, right, suggesting writing in. There's like, what, 2,500, something like that, write-in ballots on this, I think. And so,
oh, no, there's a lot more than that. There's a lot more than that.
Okay.
And when I last saw, it was more than the margin.
Yeah, so, all right, so the write-in can't. So Shelby, we
and
could
presumably
lay.
Presumably, the overwhelming portion of those write-in votes are people that would have normally voted for Judge Moore, who did that as sort of a protest.
Yeah. So my point would be, even I would say, Ken, I'll go on record as saying this. I don't think that any person who opposes the swamp with as much strength as Moore, and maybe also Mo Brooks. Mo Brooks could have been destroyed by sexual allegations. All you have to do is pull women. Any of you men can be destroyed by these things in a given moment. It could be your secretary. It could be your neighbor. It could be anyone. They could pull out stories from your past 40 years ago, my past 40 years ago, except men seem to be, you know, the targets. Any man can be destroyed by this kind of process. And it's just much more egregious to me when it's a man who has the character of Judge Moore. It's really tragedy. But let's talk about the wider implications, because that's what you started to say, and that's what we have to talk about. What does a Doug Jones win mean for conservatives first, for conservative voters?
Well, first of all, it needs to serve as a reminder. People need to realize that while everything blew up here on Judge Moore a month ago with the surfacing of the accusations, every decision the supposedly tactical genius Mitch McConnell made in this, in Alabama, I wouldn't even say in this race, was wrong, and wrong by a lot. You know, Luther Strange was a friend of mine. We served together as attorneys general. But the minute he got to Washington, first of all, he was picked by a governor who was tainted to begin with. And because he had some role as the attorney general in investigating the governor's misconduct, what we would call in the judicial side the appearance of impropriety. And so he entered office as Senator Luther Strange, wounded by the path he took to become the senator. And I remember talking to Luther before he went there, and he said what whoever the governor appointed, he was going to run for the seat. And he would have been much better off if the governor appointed somebody else and he'd run against that person. But that isn't the way it went. So Luther went to Washington and cozied right up to the leadership. I mean, immediately, no questions asked, no hesitation. And look, Senator Strange had been a staffer up there for years. He was not, you know, this was not his first trip to Washington. So he really just dove right in with the establishment thinking this is the way for me to win. And in fact, it turned out to be the path to his political demise. And as you've commented, Sandy, repeatedly, people are not happy with the establishment. That may be the understatement of the year. And they reacted to Washington's attempt to shove Luther down their throats. And unfortunately, part of what Mitch McConnell was able to achieve was to get the president on board with Luther Strange.
Yeah.
And that was very unfortunate. It was very fortunate, though, that the president's endorsement didn't carry the day in the primary. It's very important for the president that happened. I think this was a really important lesson as we head into 2018 for President Trump. Now, he's now got 51 Republicans in the Senate. They can only lose one vote on anything. And this is a Senate caucus with Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. And you only have one vote to give in the next year to be able to rely on Vice President Pence's tie-breaking vote. That's almost no margin. I mean, the Democrats are much more disciplined about sticking together than the Republicans. This is going to make for an ugly 2018 in the Senate, but it's going to make for a very interesting 2018 in the elections.
Well, let's talk about the immediate future, which is, you know, before 2018. I'm sure, Ken, that people can't even comprehend why Mitch McConnell would spend $30 million defeating Roy Moore and end up with a Democrat called Doug Jones. I've heard these prognostications on Fox this morning and last night about how Doug is going to work. He's going to have to work with President Trump. He's going to have to work with the Republicans. Do you buy that?
Right. Just like Joe Manchin works with the president, right, and votes against every nominee, yeah, and votes against the tax cuts he wants, and votes against the repeal of Obamacare. Look, I didn't see that, Sandy, because I don't watch Fox. And it's not like you're getting useful insight there. So this is an unmitigated disaster for both conservatives and Republicans. And I treat them distinctly, of course. You and I have talked about that in the past. But make no mistake about it, Mitch McConnell really, really screwed this one into the ground pretty good. And he drove this plane into the dirt, and we're all unfortunately going to pay for that over the course of the next year. Mitch McConnell needs to go. He's a terrible leader. He makes terrible decisions, and this is a great example of the fact that he fights 10 times harder with conservatives like Mo Brooks and then Roy Moore than he does with Democrats. He doesn't fight this hard with Democrats. Sandy, look at your $30 million number. Do you know how much the Democrats spent on the public campaign to defeat the repeal of Obamacare? $15 million. How much did Mitch McConnell spend to get his signature campaign promise over the line? Zero. He was busy spending that money to defeat a conservative in Alabama.
It's really jaw-dropping. It really is. And, Ken, I think the other part about not only the immediate future, when all of these policies and important proposals the president is trying to pass, the votes in the Senate are so crucial, so that's lost. We've lost one vote, as you've already just described. But now we head into 2018. Hey, I'm going to ask you something, Ken. Do you have a few more minutes with me? We only have a minute left in this segment. Can you stay for a few more minutes?
Sure.
All right, then let's take a break and we'll come back. And I want to, and there was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal. Did you see that this morning?
This morning, no. I don't get the Wall Street Journal either.
Well, all right. Well, and for good reason. And so I'm going to share their pearls of wisdom with you in just a second. But they basically, their byline says, Roy Moore's defeat shows that Steve Bannon is for losers. And then it goes about chiding conservatives and evangelicals for supporting Judge Moore and how it's
totally predictable.
Yeah,
totally
Yeah, so hang on because I want you to respond
Mitch
to
McConnell
it.
Mitch McConnell is for losers. Yeah, I don't want to face that.
All right, well, hold on. Hold on. My guest is Ken Cuccinelli, and we're discussing the Alabama race last night where Roy Moore was defeated by 1.5 points by Doug Jones. So stay tuned. There's a lot more to say about this. There's a lot more to say. So Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Hi, this is Ron Ball, and this is your Choose Greatness Minute. I was with a local congressman and his wife, and she was explaining to me her strategy for success. She said, "I believe that 90% of all success is simply showing up. I always go where I promise to go, and I go places other people don't bother to attend. I try to be everywhere I can and help as often as possible. Sometimes that is what you need to do to accomplish something great. You need to just show up. You need to be there. You need to arrive at the right Bible study, the right church event, the right crusade meeting. You need to be there to be a part of what God is wanting to do. Sometimes the most important thing you can ever do is just show up and be there for God." Learn more at choosegreatness.com. Go today to choosegreatness.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
True at McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
Sugar Grove is a small village in Illinois just west of Chicago. For the past few years, they've erected a festive red sign that says Merry Christmas right in front of the twinkling lights on the town's Christmas tree. It's right there at the corner of Route 47 and Cross Street for you folks driving nearby. Just a simple message, season's greetings. But the sign came down the other day, had to. Somebody complained. The village administrator won't say who took issue with the sign, but they had to pass along the complaint to the village attorney, and well, you know how attorneys can be, so the sign had to come down. But instead of stuffing the sign in a closet, local residents came up with a plan B. The owner of the local garage and towing company invited them to display the sign on his property directly across the street. So it's still going to be a Merry Christmas in Sugar Grove, Illinois. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Thank you. You know, I really want to thank you for coming tonight and realize when the vote is this close that it's not over. And we still got to go by the rules about this recount provision, and the Secretary of State has explained it to us, and we're expecting that the press will go up there and talk to them to find out what the situation is. But we also know that God is always in control. You know, part of the thing, part of the problem with this campaign is we've been painted in an unfavorable and unfaithful light. We've been put in a hole, if you will, and it reminds me of a passage in Psalm 40. I waited patiently for the Lord. That's what we've got to do. And he inclined to me and heard my cry and brought us up also out of a horrible pit, out of miry clay, and set my feet on a rock and established my goings and put a new song in our mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and hear it and shall be moved by that, if you will. And that's what we've got to do, is wait on God and let this process play out. I know it's late. We can't wait and have everybody wait till after 11 o'clock. But the votes are still coming in, and we're looking at that. May God bless you as you go on. May he give you a safe journey, and thank you for coming tonight. It's not over, and it's going to take some time. Thank you.
All right, that was Judge Roy Moore last night, not conceding. And, of course, you can see that he's not angry. And could I hasten to say, as an evangelical who recognizes what he's really saying, he's not saying God is in control, that means I'm going to win. He just means no matter what happens, God is sovereign. There's a certain sovereignty. Doesn't mean we don't work. We have no idea what God has in mind, so we go ahead and live our lives and try to honor him in everything that we do. We fight hard. We don't know what's going to happen with our country, but I'm not willing to give up. I don't think God is... The whole notion of God's sovereignty does not say that you don't fight, because we don't know what God has in mind. But I know for a fact that Justice Moore is not saying that God's will is that he win. He doesn't know that. I've heard him say that privately. He accepts what comes from the hand of God, which might be that he's going to lose. It's a point and a half behind there. He is waiting to see if he can come within a half point, and then there would be a recount. Ken Cuccinelli is my guest. He is the head of Senate Conservative Swim, which is a started by Jim DeMint. It's just been a powerful organization that has been responsible for giving us the only conservative senators we have in the Senate. And they're planning to do the same thing, God willing, and speaking of sovereignty, in 2018. Ken, thanks for joining me again this morning. All right.
Yeah, and we're one of those PACs that is pro-God.
Well, listen, and so, you know what? This is the thing that bothers
me. And
that's
not true of all of them on the right. We're the only, you know, we're the largest full-spectrum conservative PAC out there. We pay very close attention to abortion. We are supporting Marsha Blackburn. It's been a subject she has been on point on. We haven't left marriage behind like many others have, nor do we back off on immigration, in addition to all the economic and debt issues you're used to hearing. But that makes us very unique.
It does.
And people who want to join with us can go to senateconservatives.com. Thankfully, it's plural, senateconservatives.com.
It wasn't always. In fact, there wasn't hardly anyone there. But I would say, Ken, I want to say, vouch that is absolutely true, up close and personal. That is exactly what Senate Conservatives Fund has done. And the thing of it is, many of the other PACs that are raising money to help candidates for any races and have been for the last several years are libertarian. They stay away. Tea Party stays away from moral issues, won't touch them. And Ken, that brings us to this this defeat of Judge Moore, alleged or probably at this point defeat of Judge Moore last night in Alabama. The way they speak of him, as though he is a pariah. They did that before these allegations from these women, because he stood for and stood strongly, head and shoulders above the crowd, was willing to fight and put his own reputation and his career on the line to defend the part that the Ten Commandments played in our law. And also then that marriage was between one man and one woman. He has laid it on the line. He is a champion to many of us because of his courage. And he's scary to others because of his courage. But if he can't win in Alabama, given his history, his fearless history on these issues, where can a moral conservative candidate win?
Well, I mean, Sandy, let's not ignore the 800-pound gorilla in the room. A month ago, he had a couple of serious accusations leveled at him. And it was done with timing that made it very difficult for the truth in any, you know, Judge Moore is a judge. I'm a lawyer. Due process doesn't happen in campaigns. You know, you don't have a chance to confront your accusers, to put on evidence. And when it's 40 years old, to your point, Sandy, that you mentioned earlier is, you know, this can happen, particularly to men, of course, in a race, and there's often very little one can do about it. That factor clearly moved some votes away from Judge Moore. It also brought the write-in announcement that was 1.7% of the vote in a race that was lost by 1.5% of the vote. So, you know, that was some of the way the left is spinning this is, oh, look, we can win in Trump's backyard. This race isn't a measuring stick for any other race as it relates to Democrats versus Republicans. It's a race to analyze, to measure how we operate ourselves within the GOP and the conservative movement, and what a disaster that was from start to finish.
You know, Kim, but the other point of this to me is there is nothing they can't say about anyone. And Hollywood will echo it and the news will repeat it. They can spread lies about anyone, and that's what I fear.
Yep.
That's what I fear for conservative candidates everywhere. I just did a fascinating interview that's going to air tomorrow on my show, well, Friday, about the John Doe case in Wisconsin. And one of the things, Ken, that I talked to the Senate candidate there, her name escapes me because she has an unusual name. Her email were collected in this John Doe effort. Let me just say quickly that it was a way of destroying conservatives. It was all done anonymously. They had gag orders, and they did morning raids. It's just a horrendous story. People will want to tune in Friday and listen to that. But my point is that they've kept all of her personal email, and they're claiming they took hers and several other conservatives. She was one of the people that supported Scott Walker, and they have now said that those email, her personal email, like exchanges with her daughter on medical issues, all kinds of stuff, they've been lost in the server. They can't find them, and so they were labeled when this revelation came out as opposition research. So
mm-hmm.
I point to her, but you and I both know that any conservative candidate is going to, it can be true, it can be lies, it is ruthless, the assault upon
yep.
them, which is what worries me about 2018.
Oh, no question. It isn't new, of course, it's just been getting worse and worse. And as I keep mentioning, is that it's also happening, it isn't just coming from the left. Well, it is coming from the left, but only if you consider, as I do, Mitch McConnell and his ilk, part of the left, and they are, and your listeners need to realize that they're the Republican leadership is part of the problem. The challenge on the ballot next November will be Democrats, but getting to that ballot, the challenge is the establishment. And if you want to have a choice of good candidates, you have to engage in the primaries. As Richard Viguerie, one of the longest-serving movement conservatives, would say, it's the primaries, stupid. And, that's where a lot of these races are won. Like, typically in Alabama, except where you have the unique factors that happened in this race. But, you know, in Mississippi next year, we have a lot of deep red states along those lines where incumbents are either getting out, Bob Corker's getting out, and that now Marsha Blackburn has stepped into the gap. She's running against an establishment former Congressman Fincher. So you're going to see the establishment face off with her there. You're going to see the establishment back Senator Wicker in Mississippi against a probable challenge. And you already saw, interestingly, when Judge Moore beat Luther Strange the same day Bob Corker got out. And I joke with people that Judge Moore beat two sitting senators in one day, because that's why Corker got out, because Judge Moore revealed to conservatives at the grassroots level they can win. They can beat the establishment, even with the tens of millions of dollars that come flooding in. And 2018, yesterday may give us cause for concern in some respects, but I don't think so. I'm optimistic about 2018 from a conservative standpoint. We have the opportunity to make the Republican caucus in the U.S. Senate considerably more conservative if we engage. And in fact, Sandy, since the 17th Amendment was passed, the worst constitutional amendment in American history, which moved the election of U.S. senators from state legislatures, so that they represented the states, to general election, so that they're elected the same as congressmen are. The 2018 map is the most favorable map for the Republican Party in a midterm election since we have popularly elected U.S. senators. Your listeners, if they pick 1 year of their lives to engage in Senate races, this is the year. This is the year. This is a real opportunity. I mentioned Joe Manchin earlier. Claire McCaskill is running against Josh Hawley, who's a rock star Federalist Society attorney general who did religious liberty cases before he was attorney general. I mean, what more could we ask for? Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, John Tester in Montana is opposed by Matt Rosendale, a state auditor who's done a great job there fighting on health care in particular. Josh Mandel in Ohio, one of the best challengers to an incumbent anywhere in the country, and he's running against one of the people the Dems think might be a presidential candidate in 2020, Senator Sherrod Brown. And Josh is leading him in the polls already. There are so many opportunities. I'd really urge people to go to SenateConservatives.com. We've already endorsed a number of these candidates. Get on board with us to help the good guys across the line. Don't just help any Republican. Should only help the hardcore Republicans. And yesterday's results should only make us more determined to proceed in that direction together.
You know, Ken, I've been in this political game for such a long time, and I have to say, the percentages would be interesting. Probably 90% of the people that I supported have been defeated, I would say. This is not new. I remember when Bill Clinton was elected, especially the second time, how my heart sank. I could not believe the American people, knowing what they knew, still elected him. And so it's been defeat after defeat.
But look what we offered. We offered Bob Dole.
Yeah, but that was pretty, that was pretty cool the way he talked about himself in the third person. I was motivated, weren't you?
Yeah, that was entertaining to me. But he was not anywhere near conservative, and they had crushed the conservatives who attempted to get nominated in that go-around. And in 92, George Bush is the only guy since World War II to run as a conservative and not as a conservative. In 88, he ran as the third term of Ronald Reagan, and he wasn't. And in 92, he ran, as who he was, George Bush Sr., as a non-conservative, and he lost. And, at least Donald Trump is anti-establishment. He's not a conservative, and he hasn't claimed to be. But he's been great on judges. If the Senate would ever, stay at work for 5 days a week to move through some confirmations, there'll be a couple more this week. But there are 161 vacancies on that bench. This is a layup for the Senate, and they should be knocking these out of the park, and they're not doing it.
Yeah.
And that becomes all the more important as with this close margin. It's an easy thing that the Democrats can't stop the Republican majority in the Senate from delivering on a campaign promise. So go do it. Why aren't they doing it? They're just lazy.
Well, lazy is probably the best thing that you could say about it. I think some of us, of course, are cynical enough to think that it's intentional. But anyway, that's beside the point. Ken, listen, I thank you so much for your time this morning, because I know it's precious. Senate Conservatives Fund is Ken's organization, and he's right. Pick one candidate that you can help. Give money, or drive across country, or make phone calls. But let this energize you, not deflate you. What happened in Alabama, all the more reason to roll up our sleeves and keep fighting. Ken Cuccinelli, Senate Conservatives Fund. Ken, thank you so much this morning. Talk to you soon.
Good to be with you, Sandy.
Hey, thank you. All right, well, coming up next, I'm going to give the phone number in case you want to talk, if you have a burning thing you want to say, but I've got lots of news, too. It's 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. Something that you saw in Alabama, an observation that we may not have made, that we wouldn't know, I would be particularly interested in that. So here you go. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf. He went to see if he could find anything on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. From a distance, the fig leaves gave Jesus the impression that there was fruit on the tree. Upon closer inspection, the tree was fruitless. Perfect church attendance and ministry activity cannot replace actual Christ-like fruit produced in our lives. From a distance, it can appear as though we're bearing fruit, but what would we find with a closer look? Are we content with fruitful appearance, or do we yearn for the real thing?
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Christmas is a season that is filled with joy and laughter and absolute love.
EngageMagazine.net is a resource from the American Family Association.
It's an online magazine aimed at young adults who are asking the hard questions.
Christ is the answer for our hardship and our sorrows. And Christ is the source of our happiness and our joy.
So this Christmas, in the midst of all the hustle and bustle and shopping and getting together with family,
equip yourself with the truth. And from all of us here at Engage Magazine,
Merry Christmas!
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
Are you a person who has integrity and keeps his commitment to God and others? Jesus states in John chapter 8, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine. Keeping a long-term commitment to Jesus means learning from his word and from him. When someone keeps his commitment, they are an individual with integrity. People of integrity are people that we can count on. They come through on what they promise. Unfortunately, in today's culture, this is not always the safe bet. Today, I hear more and more people using the word integrity as if it means being true to themselves, even if it means leaving someone else to clean up the mess. Having integrity requires staying true to your word, even if it is difficult or inconvenient or expensive. Remember, nothing destroys our credibility faster than bailing on a commitment to God and others. So be a person of integrity. I'm Ryan Loving with Life Action Ministries for OneCry.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Kennedy Trump won the White House in part on a platform of defeating radical Islamic terrorism. He called for not only naming this threat, but for understanding its wellspring in an ideology called Sharia, stopping more of its adherents from coming here and countering their networks radicalizing in our communities. Much of the blame for there being little progress on these fronts lies with the president's national security advisor, H.R. McMaster. He's not just opposed this agenda, he has sabotaged it. Yesterday, though, General McMaster indicated that a new national security strategy will recognize a reality he previously rejected, namely, we do confront a radical Islamic ideology, but he insists that we can work with some of its Muslim Brotherhood practitioners. H.R. McMaster has wasted a precious year of Donald Trump's presidency. He must not be allowed to do so any further. This is Frank Affney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Hallelujah!
These are exchanges between two FBI agents assigned to the Russia probe, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. And it led Special Counsel Robert Mueller to remove Strzok from the investigation. And as you mentioned, at times this is profane. But this is the point. It is certain to fuel the narrative that the entire investigation is tainted. Now, let's begin. March 4th. Lisa Page. God, Trump is a loathsome human. Strzok. Yet he will win. Good for Hillary. It is. Would he be a worse president than Cruz? Page. Trump? Yes, I think so. Strzok. I'm not sure. Oh my God, he's an idiot. And this. God, Hillary should win 100 million to 0. Page, I know. Now remember, all this is taking place while Strzok was an integral part of the FBI's investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. He was the one credited with changing the wording in then FBI Director James Comey's assessment from, quote, grossly negligent to, quote, extremely careless. And it appears to acknowledge that they're doing something wrong in their text. In April, Page writes, quote, so look, you say we text on that phone when we talk about Hillary, because it can't be traced. By October, after candidate Trump had gotten the nomination, Strzok's bias reaches new heights. He writes, quote, I am riled up. Trump is an expletive idiot, is unable to provide a coherent answer. Then in all caps, blast, I can't pull away what the expletive happened to our country. The White House is reacting. Here's one of the president's personal attorneys, Jay Sekulow.
The conflicts of interest with inside the FBI and Department of Justice as to this Fusion GPS matter is breathtaking in scope.
And finally, in an exchange in November, before President Trump was under investigation, this Strzok bought all the president's men. Figure I needed to brush up on Watergate. Page, my God, Sessions for DOD or AG? Strzok, Sessions for AG. Good God, Page writes.
All right, so there, did you get that? That's what's happening this morning. It's just like one story right after another. And just to get this straight, to repeat, Peter Strzok is the intelligence expert with the FBI who was assigned, or at least somehow ended up overseeing the Clinton email scandal. He is the one that interviewed Clinton, was one of the agents the day that she was interviewed, not under oath, no transcript, only for a couple of hours, and she was released. After all of the implications of what she had done, carelessly using her email and including high-level national security secrets on unsecured servers, so he was the one, of course, instrumental in changing the wording that Director Comey was going to use, changing it from a legal term that would implicate her legally to something about careless. I'm doing this at the top of my head, but I can't. So the exact words are not with me. But talking at careless. Describing it as carelessness, which doesn't have legal implications, and then deciding not to charge her. So this man, Peter Strzok, is over this, and he's just written blank, Hillary should win 100 million to zero. And so he also was overseeing the investigations or interrogations of Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills, her aides, let them go, gave them back their laptops, didn't charge them with anything, even though we know for a fact that they lied in their interviews with the FBI about their knowledge of her email server. We also think now, and this is something that's being verified, I don't think it can be verified quite yet, we suspect very strongly Peter Strzok was the one that took the dossier to the FISA court to get permission to wiretap people that surrounded Trump, like Michael Flynn. It were those wiretaps that were used to bring charges against Flynn. It was the reason why they accused him. They got him finally to plead guilty for lying to the FBI. But it was this Strzok who was leading that interrogation, the one that wrote Hillary should win 100 million to zero, and all the other foul and vulgar things he wrote to his mistress, Lisa Page, who was also assigned to the Mueller team and also at the same time was working for Andrew McCabe. She was the legal counsel for that department. So this is a mess. It is a horrendous mess. And actually, I think Sebastian Gorka said it well last night. Let's listen.
It means that this whole investigation is a sham. It is a house of cards, and it should be closed down tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. You don't have to agree with the President of the United States. I was an employee of the Department of Defense for 6 years under President Obama. I did not vote for him. But the fact is, this is a senior law enforcement official who wasn't just a bureaucrat. This was an individual who has been tasked to investigate a sitting president who, if these texts are confirmed, he considers, he agrees with the person he's texting, is a loathsome individual. How does that mean you're going to investigate him? What is your axe to grind? And how are you an impartial peace officer if that is your opinion of the most senior member of our government? It is an utter outrage, Sean.
All right, so that's what Sebastian had to say. And we have a lot more to say about that. By the way, Rosenstein is testifying before Congress this morning, so that should be interesting, before a congressional committee. I just don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. The one encouraging thing to me is that these emails were discovered by the Inspector General out of the Justice Department that's exploring what's happening now. So it makes you think that Attorney General Sessions' Justice Department is actually moving in ways that we're not seeing, to try to ferret out what's going on here, what the truth is. All right, we have just a few minutes left, so let's go to the phones. I promised we would. It's 888-589-8840. Let's go to Andrew in Virginia. Andrew, you got a surprise for me. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for taking the call. So I was going to say I can appreciate and respect your weighing the evidence against Mr. Moore, in your opinion, fairly. I guess I was going to say if the same allegation was made against Mr. Jones with the same level of evidence, I wonder if you would have viewed the case the same way.
That's fair. I actually, when it came to, Minnesota's senator that just resigned, Al Franken, I made clear that personally I felt the allegations against him were not as serious and that there should be proof. There should be some kind of vetting. I don't like Al Franken, but no, Andrew, I actually do try to be honest about this stuff. So go ahead. What's your next point?
The next point was going to be, you talked about how liberals and the left will do anything to tear down conservatives. And to an extent, I would agree with you on that matter. Would you also agree that conservatives would do pretty much anything to tear down the left?
No, not lying and not digging up dirt and having people make false accusations. The problem is, Andrew, when I say conservatives, of course, I'm not saying no conservative would do that. Christian conservatives wouldn't, and for the most part, conservatives don't, and that's the reason why they keep getting beaten, because they're not ruthless. I'm not talking about Mitch McConnell. You surely were listening, and you know that I do not view him and the Republican leadership as conservatives, even though you might. I don't. But if you're talking about hard rock conservatives, most of us get our values from Judeo-Christian ethics. So we don't cheat and lie and try to make up stuff on people to destroy them. And that's a weakness on our part. It makes us weak. So anything else?
Actually, I was going to say, what about the whole birther thing with Obama? You know, a lot of people, a lot of conservatives who call themselves, you know, Christian conservatives would insist that he was born in Kenya. And I'm no fan of President Obama, but you can't. I mean, that's just a lie.
Well, but you don't, Andrew, look, so much of what we believe are lies and truth is because of what we hear. You know, how could I say this easily? I would say that an allegation like that is not the same thing as getting women to come out and say that a man did things to them or tried sexually when they were 14 and he was in his early 30s. That's really damning. I would say if you are entertaining the notion that a president may not have been born here, when he has the kind of history that he has, is, you know, Hawaii and Indonesia and all of that, that's not so far-fetched, and that's not good. That doesn't strike at a person's character. And I would say it would, and also for me with Judge Moore, even, it's important to, it's not that you don't listen to the accusers or you dismiss them offhand. They can't possibly be true. You have to entertain what truth is. So I think a lot of people that believe the birther story believe that there was some truth to it. It's not that they were trying. So I'm sure some people used it to smear him. I still think that maybe the truth about a lot of things regarding President Obama hasn't come out yet. I will say that. But you make a very good point, Andrew, and it is a standard that we try to keep. You know, Judge Moore in his race, refused to say anything bad about his opponent. He wouldn't ever. He wouldn't say anything about, he talked in generalities about the leadership in Washington, about the swamp, but he was never personally vicious. That's the kind of character that he has. But it makes you weak. Boy, if you're trying to fight in a fight and you're not fighting dirty and the other person is, or they cheat at checkers, you're going to lose. And so that's kind of the way it goes, Andrew. Listen, it's great to hear from you, and I appreciate your challenge on that. Let's go to Becky in Alabama. Good morning, Becky.
Good morning. I'm in Alabama, and I am so proud of Judge Moore for staying and believing the Lord, because I got a scripture last night, and it's the opposition he received in Jerusalem. And I think a big part of this is what the president has done about the Capitol being moved to Jerusalem. I think this is just a response of the enemy about that. But the scripture says they would not believe what God wanted. They would not believe what Jesus was doing. And they picked up stones to stone him. And this is what he said to them. He said, "If I do not the works of my Father, believe me not. But if I do, though you believe not me, believe the works, that you may know and believe that the Father is in me and I in him." And I believe that's where we are right now. We need to watch the works of the Father and believe them, because Jesus is at work, and I think Judge Moore is standing his ground to see it.
Okay, Becky, thank you. Thank you for that. It's always good to hear scripture, and it's always good to be reminded, you know, these situations are transcended by the heaven, our heavenly home. You know, we're visitors here. We're citizens. We're kind of sojourners in this land. We're not citizens of this earth, even though we must operate like that. We have to live here and operate within the world system. But heaven is our home, and God is at work in ways we cannot see. It is a spiritual battle, no doubt about that. Let's go to William in Georgia. William, you got the last word here this morning.
Hey, Sandy, good morning to you.
Good morning.
First of all, I want to encourage each and every one of us, all the radio listeners and yourself as conservative Christians, that despite of all this warfare that we've been seeing, not only against George War Moore, but even against the conservative establishment, you know, we have to learn to realize that, you know, even during the time when Elisha was being pursued by that king and Gehazi saw the army, and Elisha prayed that Gehazi's eyes be open. He said that there's more working for us than against us. And so he prayed that Gehazi's eyes would be open, so he'll begin to see that the army of the Lord is greater than the army of the enemies. And so with all the stuff that we see going on, this is just living proof that the swamp is actually deteriorating. There's a lot of exposure that's going on. And watch and see. By the beginning of this year, you're going to begin to see a great crumbling of the swamp like never before. It may not look like it now because the warfare is so high, but realistically, the reason why the warfare is so high is because the left is at their last stand. And I want to encourage us as believers that the Lord's word will be established forever.
Well, that is a great encouragement to me. Thank you so much. William, your name is cut off on the screen. William, thank you so much. That's a great encouragement. Yeah, the battle's not over. The story's not over. And this was a battle that we think we lost. Judge Moore, you know, it's possible. It's possible. Military votes may come in. There may be a challenge. It could change. Not likely, but it could. But for now, it looks like a defeat. And this is a mighty battle that we're in. And so individual battles are going to be lost, but the war is not lost. That's for sure. You know, Jesus said he sent us out as sheep among wolves. That's part of what I was trying to explain to Andrew. Because we can't use the tactics. We can't play dirty. We are like sheep among wolves. And so, but we have God. Not all of us, but those of us that acknowledge and bow our knee to him and honor him in our lives and make him Lord, we have him. And that's an insurpassable comfort. And Judge Moore is going to be fine, by the way. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.